What's good? I'm back. Yours truly, the one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast, aka Triple P, aka the Common Sense Podcast, your source for music, sports, politics, world events, and much, much more. Today, we're going to skip the sponsors and we're going to bring in a guest. We got DJ Dre. And let's pull up the. Let's pull up our little tabs here. All right.
There you go.
Hey, what's good? What's good? How you doing?
What's up, Paul? How you doing?
We good. We good. So where you based out of? Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you based out of.
Well, I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina now. I'm originally from Far Rockaway, Queens, New York.
Okay.
Lived in Freeport, Long Island for a spell. And I basically been out here for about 12 years now in Greensboro. I coach youth football, the Gladiators. I've been doing that for about 18 years, working with a lot of kids, boys and girls, basketball, baseball, football. And now I'm DJing, doing a lot of weddings, birthday parties, et cetera. And I'm just trying to get more fan base, different type of audience. And so I looked you up and I said, man, this sounds like a guy from New York. And I like what you're doing, you know, so I'm here.
Okay, well, I'm actually in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I see you up in G-Boro and whatnot. Sir. What's the music scene like in G-Boro right now?
Oh, it's popping. We have a lot of restaurants that cater to DJs now. Since things open back up, restaurants, bars, and you got like Fat Tuesdays. They got an outdoor patio. They have live bands and stuff out there. Green Street. So every weekend there's a party, there's a concert, there's something happening. We got a new restaurant just opened up. It's called House Divided by the airport. And they have a DJ in there like every weekend. And it's a pretty good scene. You could go out on the back if it, you know, the weather permits. They got a big patio. You could eat, smoke, your hookah, whatever, you know, and hang out, have a good time. I recommend that spot.
That sounds a lot more popping than what's going on in Fayetteville, North Carolina right now.
Yeah, man.
It's now, how's the scene for the artist out there, like performance wise?
Well, there's a lot of concerts, like I said, and a lot of parties every single weekend that hosts upcoming talent. And I started an internet radio show called the Dre and Shaw Show, the Vibe Family. And I'm also at a point now, we reached close to like 12,000 listeners. So I'm at the point now where I may take on unsolicited artists, play their stuff, and try to help them out, get a little spin. Because the show is nationwide. It's on the MixLR app on your phone or computer, the Dre and Shaw Show. So we come on nightly around 7 p.m. to around 9:30, 10 o'clock. We're trying to cut back on the days and times because basketball season is about to kick in. And as I say, I coach actually two teams, 7 and 8 and 9 and 10-year-olds. And then I have a lot of birthdays and weddings coming up. So I have to do a lot of programming of music, rehearsing, you know, learning names to do introductions, that kind of thing. So if you're interested in how I DJ, you can find me on the Bash, DJ Dre One out of Greensboro. Actually, I'm like the number two at this point, the number two wedding DJ and the number three or four party DJ on the Bash. And that's like out of all of the states that's adjacent to North Carolina, like Virginia, South Carolina. I'm the man.
Now, coming from Queens, I'm guessing you got a lot of your influence from up north in New York and whatnot.
Correct. Well, to give you a backdrop on that, I was in a group called Kings of Pressure.
Okay.
And we was produced by Chuck D, Hank Shockley.
Okay.
Eric Van
Damme,
familiar
Sadler, with all those cats.
Yeah. Public Enemy. How I got started, Dr. Dre had a station, WBAU Radio, High Street University. And we used to come up there and play demos. And that's when we used to have the cassette tapes and they would play them. So one day Chuck had did a demo, and
now when you say Dr. Dre, you mean the Ed Lover and Dr. Dre?
Correct.
From, yeah.
Yo Money. What was it? Yo MTV Rap.
Yeah, yeah.
He, later on, he was in a group called Original Concept at first.
Okay.
And so they was all friends with Chuck. They used to have a group called Spectrum City, where they used
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah, used to do a lot of the college parties and stuff like that. All right. So anyway, Chuck played Dre played Chuck's song called Public Enemy Number One. And Jam Master Jay heard the song. He loved it. He played it for Rick Rubin. And a week or so later, Chuck had a meeting, told everybody, you know, Def Jam was looking to sign him, so forth. He didn't want to do it at first.
Yeah.
Hank and I think Hank, Keith, and Eric Vietnam Sadler convinced him to do it, if I'm not mistaken, and Professor Griff. So he got the deal. Then he wanted to bring along all of the groups that he was messing with in Long Island. So we had True Mathematics. We had the Leaders of the New School. We had Kings of Pressure. Then they started producing other groups, Young Black Teenagers.
Yeah, I remember them.
They came out. So we put out a song called You Know How to Reach Us with the beeper in it. And we got signed to Next Plateau. So Chuck and them went on tour. When they got off tour, he came back. The group wasn't doing what they were supposed to do. He went on another tour. He gave us a warning. When I come back, if y'all don't have this done, that done, then that's a wrap. Nobody took it serious. I took it serious. Another partner named Double D in the group took it serious. Johnny Juice, I don't know if you're familiar with Johnny Juice. He did all of the stretching on Rebel Without a Pause. The Terminator X, that was Johnny Juice.
Okay.
And so he produced a lot of songs with Chuck and them, but they didn't give him a lot of credit for stuff until the end. But Juice left the group. He went into the Navy. Crack J went to college to play football. Easy Breeze, I think he went to jail. So it was just me and Double D left. We convinced Eddie O'Loughlin and Next Plateau we can do the album. Neither one of us had the experience or really the knowledge to do it. But being that I was a DJ and an MC from around the neighborhood, I thought I can do it. So yeah. Chuck and them had left music in the studio for us, but Red Alert heard it and told Eddie O that, hey, they need new beat, new productions. The guys can rap straight up, but they just need new music. Me, I was like, man, we can make it, Ed, this is good. So we ended up doing it, did a video, and it crashed. I mean,
the album, what do you mean it crashed? Just the sales didn't do good?
No, the album sucked.
It sucked?
Yeah, you said? We had like two good songs on the whole album, man. I'm just keeping it 100.
Yeah, okay.
We had two good songs on the whole album. We did a song called Armed and Dangerous on Red Alert, Goes Berserk first album. Then we ended up going to on tour to Paris with Ultramagnetic MCs and Lakim Shabazz. And then we did some shows out there, came back, did some shows with a guy named Sugar Bear that was also one of Chuck's and them groups. And it got to the point where they told me I was a better manager than an artist because the way I could, you know, put the stuff together, to visualize the things, go in the studio and I could create, but I wanted to be an artist, so I let Double D shine and I took the back seat. But like I said, it crashed and burned. So what happened, Chuck and him used to listen to our demos late at night, 2-3 in the morning. He would come up to the studio. We had been up there already doing our little demos or whatever. And we was hard at first. We was street. We was hard. It was five of us.
Yeah.
So Chuck came in and told us we couldn't rap like that because we was on Next Plateau with Salt and Pepper and Sybil. So we had to soften up. And that's what killed us right then and there. When he, NWA, I believe Chuck gave them our concept. The way they album cover was, that was our album cover look. everything they did when they first came out was Kings of Pressure, and that's on Everything I Love.
Now, when you say Chuck, you said Chuck D was telling y'all that was music was too hard?
Correct. He said,
and that makes a lot of sense because Chuck D was, you know, straight intellectual music, oh, yeah. Knowledge, wisdom, gods in the earth. Definitely Marketing nothing, you know, nothing Shoot 'Em Up, Bang Bang, or I Sell Dope, or anything with his music. Now, do you think groups like are harder to deal with in the music industry? Because, like you said, everybody didn't have the same effort or didn't put the same like energy. Seriousness into it. You know, they right. just played around with it and whatnot.
I mean, when Kings of Pressure first got together, everybody that heard our demo said, this group is out of here.
Now, what year was this?
This was like 88, 89.
Well, nobody, but in 1988, from what I've gathered, everybody at that time was just doing it because they loved it and they were trying to do it. It wasn't really a serious thing. Nobody really knew where this could really be still.
Correct. But you had to think. You had Run DMC. You had LL Cool J.
Yeah.
You had Rakim, Eric B. You had Jazzy Jeff. I mean, these groups was like, then the Beastie Boys came out.
Oh, yeah, so, the Beasties.
So the music scene was definitely hot right there. And then you had Queen Latifah, MC Light, even in them eras. But the money wasn't like it is
now. But none of those cats are really hard rappers, though, that you right. name.
But we wasn't like talking about Bang Bang Shoot 'Em Up. We was telling stories from the hood, like our life stories, basically.
So y'all were kind of like a 1988 version of Onyx, probably, I want to say.
That's a good analysis. Like Sonic.
Like really hard, Sonic. Like just real hard, tough rhymes.
Hard beats, hard energy. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like a little rock and roll feel, like a little wow. And he said we couldn't do it, right? So dig this. Chuck and them used to come, like I said, come late at night when we would leave. And he come up with a record called Rebel Without a Pause. And the cadences, some of the words, the flow.
And that was the name of y'all's group, you said, right?
We were Kings of Pressure.
He was Kings of Pressure. Okay.
He was Public Enemy. Yeah. But they produced us. They birthed us. So I ain't saying Chuck ain't no genius and he ain't do that. But he stole a lot of our style and used it for Public Enemy, but told us we couldn't rap like that. We were so hard, people was calling us the sons of Public Enemy. And that's how it was going to be marketed.
Okay.
We was the sons of P.E. We had songs called Wired for Sound, you know, and Rebel Without a Pause came up. The same energy, the same noise, the same boom. Rebel was actually an accident. It was Funky Drummer, and Eric Vietnam Sadler played the keyboards, and he was sitting there playing with the keys, and he hit that key by accident, and everybody looked and said, keep doing it, and they put it in the record, and that's what became the hit for them. And a lot of it had to do with us sleeping and not doing our job, but we wasn't allowed at that time to take our demos home with us. We used to have to wait out. Say he told us to be at there at 8 o'clock for a session. They wouldn't show up till 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night and had us sitting there waiting for them to come in to just make music.
So basically when they recorded your music at the studios, they wouldn't let you take no copies home is what you're saying.
None.
Is that really derived on the early years where they controlled everything from every aspect, especially with the masters?
He didn't want it leaked. He didn't want us to take it up to WBAU and play it. Because like I said, Bring the Noise, Rebel. Listen at the first album, Yo Bum Rush the Show, and then listen to Rebel and Bring the Noise. It went from night to day because of Kings of Pressure. He took our soul from us. And that's why everybody skedaddled and went their own separate ways. I don't think no group would have touched us point blank, period. We was five assassins on the mic. We had two DJs, Johnny Juice, Juice was like a wizard. I mean, no, I would put him up in a battle against anybody. Juice was that nice. Then we had a dude named Spanky, but Spanky got kicked out the group, so it was five of us and Johnny Juice. Juice started doing a lot of work with Chuck and him, and he caught a big ego, like he was better than us at this point, because he would go backstage with Chuck and him, and we got pretty much just left behind. So did True Mathematics. I mean, he had the college parties on lockdown. They told him that no sales, and he couldn't do nothing else after that. He was done. So I started shopping demos myself, and I got a deal, but a guy named Ron Scola killed my deal on Mercury Records. I had a solo deal ready to take off. So I gave up the music business, and I'm glad I did, because like every time you turn around, a rapper getting shot, rapper getting killed, robbed, you know?
Let's touch on that real quick then, since you brought that up. I asked myself, is it a hip-hop culture problem, or is this like a hood culture or urban culture problem with these rappers getting killed? Because it's not necessarily rappers killing these rappers.
You want me to get controversial?
I mean, I don't care. This is like, on this podcast, I don't like, all we're right. Not into censorship and anything of that nature. Like,
all right, well, let's get into it. Basically, like I said, I was a student of the game because I learned from the best. Chuck and Hank were geniuses. And if you just sit there in the room and listen to how they talk, how they strategize, how they market, I mean, they would put a map up in the studio and pinpoint where they want to market their music and where they want, what areas they want to hit. All right. He put the S1Ws all that together for a show of strength, like the Black Panthers kind of thing.
What's the S1Ws?
That was the Kung Fu artist that stood behind him and Flavor when they go on stage.
Okay.
And they dance, you know, twirl the machine guns around.
Yeah, no, because they definitely put on a show. They put on a real show.
They put a hell of a show on. So, and I think Dougie Fresh helped him with that, because he was a master of that too.
Yeah, he's a great entertainer too. Yeah.
But the music, when it first came out, it was all conscious music.
You know, a lot of conscious stuff.
The X-Clan, KRS-One, Enemy, The Rakims, Four Righteous Teachers, Lakim Shabazz. And then when NWA came out, it's because
the success was different, right?
It changed music, period, because now it was acceptable to call a woman a bitch. It was acceptable to talk about how many people you killed, how much
fuck money the police, you got, fuck a lot police, of stuff, yeah.
Kill the president.
They were using the N-word, I think, super heavier than most rappers, probably.
That's why they tried to sign a bill to get that word banned.
Yeah.
You know? Because as a DJ, even now, right now, it's super hard to find clean copies of club banging records. I have to really search, and multiple record pools to find a clean version that don't cuss or don't say B or don't say the N word. Because, like I said, at a party, I'm dealing with like corporate upscale people. They do not want to hear that.
Well, you know, part of the problem with that is these artists getting in the game, they just don't know no better. They don't know that clean versions are really, it's not voluntary if you want to get it out to the full masses. It's mandatory because dirty versions, are, like you said, they're limited, you know, because you're dealing with corporate entities, advertisers, and things of that nature. I mean, it's even with YouTube, there are a lot of videos that get disapproved because it's too explicit, and hip hop is definitely way more explicit in nature than any genre. And that's the thing, like somebody was saying, you don't see pop artists, this happening with pop artists or even country artists or rock artists. It's really just hip hop. So this is just a hip hop problem, right?
I mean, it is. It's a cultural problem, a street problem. A black person,
because labels are signing the same artist on all genres. They don't care. They just want money makers.
The labels encourage it.
They encourage it. Yeah,
they hype you up to say you need to sound like this or your records won't sell. You need to show your ass or your records won't sell. And that's not true, but it's became so stereotypical that every artist come out, they all sound the same. They mumble rap, can't hardly hear what the hell they saying. Everybody in their video is half naked. And a lot of these artists don't have that kind of money that you think they have that you see in these videos. They probably better off than you and I right now, but they're not millionaires and billionaires. I promise you that. Even like, remember they used to have a show called Your MTV Cribs, where they had the artists show off their house. Yeah. All right. Redman told the story because he lived in a one-bedroom apartment and his cousin slept on the floor. You know, he ain't had no big crib. He said when they asked him to do the show, the first thing they said was, we got three or four houses we need you to look at. So basically, everything's a marketing strategy to make you look bigger than what you are to sell records.
Well, I agree with one thing you said and kind of disagree with it. I agree that it's true when you said it's true. Like, you know, like kind like Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole being at the top like they have for so long show you that you don't have to do shoot 'em up bang bang music to be successful.
Not true. J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar, if you listen to their latest music, it's all trap music.
It's not shoot 'em up bang bang though. They're not gangster rappers or dope dealer rappers. Not Kendrick and Cole.
They switched up, bro.
They don't rap. Their content doesn't say I sell drugs or I shoot people.
J. Cole had a record, My Neighbor Thinks I Sell Dope. My Neighbor Next Door Thinks I Sell Dope, right? But I am. I mean, what are you talking about?
J. Cole's never sold dope though.
It's in his lyrics. It's
the He's never sold dope.
I don't know the man personally, so I can't say that. But
I'm from the same city. He's never sold dope. It's not to be taken literally. So,
exactly. But if you're a kid listening to that, you would think that man sold drugs.
But J. Cole and Kendrick haven't been on the top of the game because of their last content for the last 10 years. They've been on top of the game because they're a lot cleaner than most rappers. They're not shoot them up, bang, bang. They're not I sell drugs. I degrade women all the time.
All right, let me ask you this.
But another thing
Who's the top five artists on Billboard right now?
On Billboard right now? Genre rise?
Rap, hip hop. Who's the top
five? I don't know exactly right now. Probably, I think it's NBA Youngboy, Drake. Mm-hmm. I forgot who the other three were.
Eminem is up there.
Eminem's up there. Mm-hmm. But Eminem's not a gangster rapper, not shoot 'em up, bang bang either though. But
Eminem got something else going for him. He got Dr. Dre. He got Eminem got lyrics out of crazy.
Okay, well,
hold on. You won't go to a club and hear Eminem records banging in a club in a DJ mix. You don't see no DJs I know searching for any Eminem record to play at a party.
Well, they never have Eminem, but that's the thing. Not every artist needs radio support or this kind of support that everybody else gets. Even NBA Youngboy doesn't get a lot of radio play, but he's the second most played person on the planet. And I would only argue
the features.
I think that's because he puts out more content than anybody else.
He do a lot of features too.
But if you look at a cat like Drake being number one, Drake is number one simply more because of the content of the music. And then a cat like NBA Youngboy is just putting out way more content, you know? So the numbers are just ridiculously up there, you know?
Drake got like 5 to 10 records in the top 100.
All the time,
The top 50, constantly. I mean, he's killing them. And he switched up a little bit, you know, he do a little controversial stuff, and that's attracting sales because controversy sells, sex sells, you know what I mean? And what female rapper come out without being half naked right now planning on selling?
I totally
music?
Agree. Like, there's no more of the MC Lights and Queen Latifah's.
None.
The days of those are completely done of being at the top. You're right about that, but the dudes don't seem to necessarily have to go that route. Like you said, they don't have to go that route, but they choose to.
Man, half of these rappers out here is gay, man. And they're undercover and they starting to expose themselves more and more and more. And right now, everybody's trying to be what they're really not, what they're not. They're not built like that, but it's because they need to make money. And this is what the label and their managers and their promoters is telling them. This is what you need to do to sell records. You got records where a dude ain't even talking, really, just humming, and it's selling like crazy. It's all marketing. And if I tell you the same thing a million times every single day, you're going to believe me. So if I tell you that Drake is the best rapper in the world, and every time you turn on the radio, Drake is playing, Drake is playing, Drake is playing, you're going to say Drake is the best rapper in the world. But he's not. It's just marketing and publicity and money.
Well, like, that's the thing, though. Being the most successful and being the best ain't the same thing to me.
All right, what do you put Jay-Z as?
Like, I would say Jay-Z is probably the most successful rapper I've ever seen. Do I think he's the best, like the best rapper I've ever heard in my life?
Mm-hmm.
No, I would say Nas is better than him.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably Rakim is better than him.
All right, stop right there. Why do you think Jay-Z brand is bigger than both of them artists you just named?
Less conscious.
Huh?
He's less conscious of a rapper. Like, Jay-Z came out, like, he was all about money from the get-go, man.
Mm-hmm.
Jay-Z was a money rapper from the get-go. And then something that Jay-Z, the fact that he chose the name Rockefeller,
mm,
always felt like wasn't a coincidence. I mean, who was John D. Rockefeller? He was a guy who had the monopoly. I mean, he had the monopoly on oil. He owned the very last monopoly. I mean, Jay-Z was probably the most successful rapper we've ever seen. And I don't mean inside of just rap. I mean inside and out of rap. You know, Eminem, I love him. He's great. But outside of rap, businessman, he ain't no Jay-Z.
No. So let me ask you this. Do you think, now, without all the controversy, do you think Kanye West is a better rapper than Jay-Z?
A better rapper than Jay-Z?
Yeah.
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Have you listened to Kanye West's lyrics?
I don't think he's a better rapper. I don't think your lyrics necessarily
make you a
better rapper.
If Kanye West,
voice and delivery is a part of this too, to me.
All right. If they had verses right now with Jay-Z and Kanye West, I believe Kanye West will beat him.
I don't think so.
I'm telling you. I put money on it.
I don't think so. And maybe that's because I never really been a guy that followed Kanye that super heavy.
Kanye got more hits than Jay-Z. Jay-Z just got publicity behind him, bro.
This is one thing I'll say. He has more impact over the culture, and I will tell you why. He got his money a lot faster than Jay-Z did. A lot faster. I mean, his impact over the culture is ridiculous, Kanye, right now. And let's talk about Kanye. Like, what's your take on what's going on with him?
I love it.
What do you mean you love it? You love it like...
Well, let me explain. On one hand, he's exposing the industry for what it is. What he's saying is not wrong. It's just he's all over the place with it.
And, You're right.
But what he's saying definitely not wrong. And he hitting them in their heart with their pocketbook. And that's exactly why they trying to shut him down and cancel him with this and take his money and destroy him and make you think he's crazy. Okay. What have they done to, like, pretty much every leader that tried to convince a nation that something ain't right? They took him out. Okay. They took him out. I mean, Prince was on to something when he was telling everybody, put out your own music. Stop going to these record companies and so forth and so on. And a month or two later, Prince was mysteriously dead. Michael Jackson wanted to buy Sony Music. he was like, I could buy it. He wanted to buy it or did buy the Beatles catalog. And next thing you know, Michael Jackson mysteriously dead. Okay. So you have a lot of stuff that's going on that we do not really understand or know about, but it's some stuff going on that's really serious out here, you know.
Isn't the Kanye thing, though, a little deeper than just the music industry? What about, I think part of the message is that people are not getting is that white people are not Jewish. They're only Jewish by religion. Like, they're not Jewish by
the original religion. Jews are black people.
Yeah,
the original people, Jews are black people.
Yeah, Jerusalem is right in the corner of Africa.
Correct.
We know it's been conquered multiple times. And the people now that are calling themselves Jews are really just the ancestors of the last conquerors.
Of the last tribe of Israel, which are black people. That's why they're called Jewish. Meaning yeah. Jewish, like you're not Jews. And they understand it. But they control 95% of the entertainment business,
and that's just common sense and common history and knowledge that Jerusalem has been conquered over and over again. So whoever now is there is not the original people. They're just ancestors of the last people who conquered it. So that means, and it's been conquered multiple times. And even when they say King David conquered, if you go off of biblical, but I don't believe in the Bible, but even if we go off the biblical sense, we know Hebrews were not Caucasians either, you know? And it's like, so it's more deeper than just that. And I think Kyrie, he basically tried to double down on what Kanye was doing when he retweeted that documentary.
That's all he did.
He didn't put no context to it.
That's all he did.
That's all he did. And he's getting punished for that.
And they lost their mind. So basically what happened, you saw a million soldiers march on the center and say, Kyrie not in the game, then we boycotting. The next day, Kyrie was back on the court. With all them stupid demands, even Stephen A. Smith, which I think is a sellout, was like, that's ridiculous. They trying to, you know, make a mockery of him and da-da with the whoop. And everybody's trying to do stuff to please people, just like the LGBT community. I mean, so much power is given to them right now.
Yeah.
And now they just legalize them to get married and all this kind of stuff.
And they're less than like 1% of the country, probably.
But they organized. Yeah. And that's when you organize, you're going to get things accomplished. Point blank, period.
Great point.
You know what I mean? They organize. Some happen to one, the whole community steps up and they speaks out, just like with the Me Too movement, you know? That got some strength, but it kind of died down a little bit. But that LGBTQ is still strong. They still chasing Dave Chappelle. They still after people.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the people that's, you know, of the homosexuality, you know, gender, or whatever you want to call it, are owners in the corporate America. They own these record labels and film companies. And
it's
so forth.
No secret. Yeah,
and
it's
that's
no
what
secret.
They call us Illuminati. And, you know, the secret parties. I mean, they've been making movies about this kind of stuff forever. We just thought it was a movie.
Now,
where
did you hear
these ideas come from?
Did you hear that? Okay, you know, when the black Israelites were out there, you know, protesting on behalf of Kyrie, did you hear that they said busloads of rabbis had pulled up and saw them brothers out there and like, we don't want no parts of this, and turned right back around and left? And I was like, so they were actually coming out there to protest against Kyrie.
Exactly. Make a mockery.
And then, like, you know, like I was telling my friend, like, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but it's like borderline white supremacy or white supremacy when you're telling Kyrie, you got to have anti-Semitic training. You got to have sensitivity training, you know. And Stephen, I know you said Stephen A. Smith flip-flop. He's a sellout, and he likes to flip-flop back and forth. But he did say they're trying to emasculate Kyrie.
That's the only props.
We've heard this narrative before, you know. Yeah.
But the way he was on Kyrie, trying to take that man back, like, I wouldn't re-sign him. Get one. And he got
influence. Oh, yeah, he flip-flops so
much. He got influence.
Yeah.
the way he was Westbrook this and Westbrook that, he always down on the brothers. But how much does he talk about Brett Favre and this money scandal? You don't hear a peep about it. Mention it one time, but every time you turn around, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Russell Westbrook, he always putting them down. Now the scandal with Jerry Jones. You ain't hear nothing about it. Oh, that's old. That's old. LeBron James spoke up, and now it's out
there. Yeah, but LeBron James is a sellout too, though. He flip-flops as much as anybody.
For sure. For sure.
You know.
He does stuff when it's convenient.
Yeah, very convenient to him. Like, you know, he didn't speak out when the white kid got beat to death on his school property. You know, he did, and then he sits there and thinks cops should allow people to stab people to death before they even do anything, you know. Like, he's not a real humanitarian like he claims.
No.
But let's get in back into you. Youth sports.
Yeah.
Something I just found out recently, like, school was originated because kids were running rampant in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
What would the youth be without youth sports in America?
Oh, boy. It would be a lot of teenagers that's fatherless still. We call them latchkey kids, okay?
Yeah.
And there's kids, a lot of these kids I coach are good kids. You know, good mom. You know, you could tell they come out the way they have their haircuts, which is mandatory in my program. Before a game, all the kids must have a haircut.
Okay.
And I've been doing that forever. And they comply, the parents comply.
Now, is this recreational league?
I've done it all. Pop Warner, the AAU.
AAU and recreational? Okay.
Correct. And I'm doing the YMCA right now for the last two seasons, only because I got tired of traveling, the kind of money that you're spending with the AAU programs just to do the same thing you could do at a local tournament. None of the teams was like on that level of eliteness. And it was just, I think it's a con game, the AAU basketball program. What it used to be in the days of Jamal Mashburn and Mark Jackson.
I remember Jamal Mashburn, you know,
them days, it was a little better. And a lot of the NBA players now came from AAU backgrounds, a lot of them. Even Chris Paul got some AAU teams together here in Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
But I host tournaments as well. You could look on YouTube. It's called Swan to Ball. And I do it at the Greensboro Sportplex every year. It's like a national tournament. And it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. The COVID just killed us a little bit, killed us a lot.
It killed a lot of people with that stuff, yeah.
Yeah. But with the AAU programs, people spending like hundreds, like $10,000, $5,000 just to believe in their kid is going to be a star. And I'm like, it's a fantasy.
You feed. So it's like American kids. Idol.
It's a fantasy they feed in these children, man. You know, there's one out of a million kids make it into the NBA.
NBA, or the NFL.
And if you can't dominate in middle school and high school and don't have a name for yourself, they're not checking for you. You could go to how many camps you want to go to. You could keep switching teams because the coach ain't giving you enough playing time, but you're not disciplined. Your work ethic is lousy. Your grades are lousy. All you want to do is and-one moves and Euro steps and crap like that. You're selfish. You don't want to share the ball. So I got rid of so many players because of that, and they think I'm a bad coach. But at the end of the day, they all say you was the best coach I ever had. Because simple fact, I was disciplined. You came late to practice, you running laps. And then I got to the point where I was like, parents going to pay a fine. You know, if your kid come late for an hour, then you owe me $10. And he might not practice that day still. If your kid is messing up, his grades is bad, whatever class he's failing, he going to come right here and do his homework. I got teachers that was like parents that were teachers. And they would check it and help them do their homework. And that's the only way you get back on this court. And the parents respected it. And they I'm telling you, they came year after year after year. I mean, I can't count how many haircuts, how many pairs of socks, how many times I done picked the kid up and dropped them off, How many times I done bought kids food? We going on a tournament, you know, we there all day and we go to eat and nobody got money. Like, your parents knew y'all was coming. Like, nobody got $20 to eat. No, coach, my money. So now I'm got to feed all your kids. I mean, it got to the point I was just, I'm tired. I was done. So my partner is the athletic director of the YMCA down the street from where I live. So I went over there, told him I wanted to coach. He thought I was joking because he was like, man, you know, you on this level, at least you think you are. And this is just like developed. I said, that's what I want. Because if I could take a bunch of kids that don't know how to play at all, don't hardly know how to dribble, can't shoot, and I can make them good, then that shows me I really am a good coach. And that's what I've been doing. And we've been like 5-0, 6-1, 5-3. We've been killing teams. Because I still got that AAU mentality, but I just brought it to the rec league. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As far as the discipline and training. But I still look at YouTube videos to learn certain stuff. And then I go to practice and I implement it. And the kids, they pick it up just like that. And I enjoy it. You know, you practice one day a week for 1 hour. You go to the game on Saturday for 1 hour. Go home. You're done. I ain't got to order no uniforms. I ain't got to, you know, schedule no tournaments, nothing. So I'm like, I'm loving it. And I got some good kids. But I do go above. I do banquets for the kids, which the Y don't provide. So I do pool parties, and we give them little medals and stuff like that. So I do spend a little money on them, but it's worth it to me, you know, to spend $100, $200 just to see them having a good time with each other, breaking bread. And a lot of them be going – we'll be friends all through middle school and stuff now because they play for me, you know? So now you got somebody got your back that's on the same path as you, you know, want good grades, want to be in sports or whatever.
Okay, we're like 40 minutes in. I got a couple more questions because I don't try to go over the hour mark.
All right.
Hey, I've heard AAU basketball is killing high school basketball. Is that true?
It's absolutely true.
Why is that?
Because the kids think they're going to get recognized by scouts faster
at
AAU.
And I've heard scouts don't even go to high school basketball games no more.
It's against the NCAA rules to start recruiting kids after ninth grade.
Wow.
So that's what shut that down. So just like you see these AAU tournaments and they be like, we're going to have scouts in attendance. That's not true. They do that just to bring teams into their tournaments. You never see a scout sitting at the tables, marking down what kid is that and talking to kids. They did a few years ago, but they don't do that any longer. It's done.
Now, they don't have AAU football, right?
They have Pop Warner football, AYF football.
But it's nothing like basketball,
they do have,
right?
AAU football.
They do?
Yeah, they do.
Is it anything like basketball, though?
Far as what?
Like the development and stuff.
I mean, it all depends on the coaches because, like I said, these coaches ain't like retired college coaches. They regular guys.
Regular
like
people, the AAU people.
Yeah, they regular guys like you and I. We want to
charging an arm and a leg, basically, right?
Yeah, you got to pay a membership fee to be an AAU.
Yeah.
So you pay your membership fee, you get an AAU, and then the tournaments that you can normally, you know, do your three games for $150. With AAU, they want $650, $500 just to play three games. And you don't get no awards and medals at the end of the game, even if you're the champion. It's just thanks for coming.
It's basically just paying for promotion to showcase.
That's exactly it.
Which doesn't really – the players still got to develop. They still got to have discipline. And I always felt like part of sports is – like discipline is – one of the number one purposes of sport, you know?
Yeah, but what they do is these kids do one good move, and they put them on Instagram and Facebook.
And
they get a lot of hits.
Star.
Now they think they D1 players, and you're not. Because when you go face the D1 coaches, you don't even make the team. You don't even make red shirt because your discipline, your footwork, everything is not there. And then you got a lot of coaches. Let's say you're a 10th grade team. They put you in 8th grade divisions, and now you out there killing everybody. Everybody think you're an elite team, but you playing kids that's two grades under you. So mentally, they ain't developed enough to even play with you guys. You know what I'm saying?
You think that's why, like Dwayne Wade's son, like can't seem to make it? And like you would think a cat like Dwayne Wade's son would be a hell of a lot better than he is, and he's just not really that good.
Which one?
Zaire Wade. I think Zaire Wade, the one that
Because one of them turned.
He went to play for the G League. Yeah.
That's a younger one.
Yeah, he had one go play for the G League, and he fizzled out. You would think Dwayne Wade's son would have
a lot of them, even like LeBron James' son. A lot of them come in there thinking they stars because of who their parents are, and because of their last name.
Yeah, but I think Lil Bronny's working out harder than Zaire Wade.
Yeah, because I thought they hung out at one point.
They did. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think Wade's son just ain't built like that. I don't know.
You would think working with your father and stuff like that, you would really have an advantage and an edge up on.
But that's players. Not true neither, because we call that daddy ball.
And daddy
the worst,
ball.
And the worst okay. And the worst coach is a parent coaching their kid.
Because they yeah.
You're not gonna listen. You're not gonna do the work because you know that's mom. You know that's dad. So you're not gonna do the work. I hate it. I hate that when I go play a team, you'll see the coach focus on his son more than the rest of the team. And the team never becomes good.
That's,
and that kid never becomes good because all of the pressure to be good is on them.
That's kind of like the LaVar Ball thing, right? I mean, because LaMelo, LaMelo, he could ball. But them other two, I mean, Lonzo can't even stay healthy. The other one can't even make the league. You know, they were definitely oversold.
Well, they got three. He got three in the league now, though.
Well, one, the other one didn't make
them on Charlotte. Yeah.
Well, the other one got cut off Charlotte. He didn't make it.
Oh wow.
He didn't make it.
I didn't know that. Oh.
And he's a pure shooter. You would think, you know, he could get a job just because he could shoot.
He'll get picked up or he'll go overseas one.
He's gonna have to go overseas.
You gotta say they thought that man was crazy. Look at him now. That man's a genius.
He was right about LaMelo. I'll tell you that much. Because LaMelo, he said LaMelo would be the best. His third would be the best. And LaMelo does look like he's going to be a star. But Charlotte is doing them all wrong. And what about that? Are you a Charlotte Hornets fan at all?
I go to a few games. And I'm not a fan of any team no more because they try to make all these super-duper teams.
You're a player fan like me. Yeah.
I'm a player fan. You know, if you're playing somebody good, another good team, I'll go check you out. Like Golden State. It's not a favorite of mine, and I watch them. Depends on who they play. You know, if they don't play nobody good, I'm not gonna watch them.
Yeah.
Same with the Lakers. The Lakers suck. But
oh man, let's not even talk about them.
Yeah, if they playing, you know, a good team, I'm gonna check them out.
Then you like, check it out, yeah.
You know, so unless I'm bored and nothing else to do.
But all right, we're about to let it go. You got anything else you want to say? And you can come back on anytime. You know, you want to come back on again.
I definitely appreciate the opportunity.
Anything you want to plug in? Any your radio show again or whatnot?
Yeah, it's the Dre and Shaw Show, the Vibe Family on MixLR app. You can Google search it. It's on your computer, your phone. Dre Dre and Shaw Char on MixLR app. We're on Sundays, Monday, and Tuesdays from 7 to 9:30, 10 o'clock. We play a lot of old school R&B, a little bit of hip hop, a little good mixture, neo soul, a little bit of jazz, and
good music.
Yeah, good vibes, good music, all clean, and we have a good time, man. You know, you get in the chat room, you download the app, hit the follow button, and you get in the chat room. We all basically they all just ask how each other's day was, and you know, oh girl, you remember when this song came out? You know, I mean. It's just a good vibe, good feeling. A lot of sisters and brothers that's in the same family on there. And they live in different. We come on here every night, and that's the way that we could communicate with each other and listen to some good music. So it's serving a lot of purposes. If you at work and, you know, you're bored, we'll get you through your day. Listen to the show.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on. You can come back on anytime you want. Just hit me up, man. And that was DJ Dre.
Gladiators.
All right.
Thanks, Paul. Peace.
All right. Peace. What's good? I hope y'all enjoyed that interview. DJ Dre definitely liked what he had to say about the Public Enemy and the hip hop and whatnot. We 50 minutes into it and we about to go. Thank you for tuning in. Peace, and I'm out.